Hi, and welcome to Unhinged History, the podcast where two people separately and compulsively learn the history stories that we weren't taught in schools, and then get so excited that we rev up our friends until our friends' eyebrows itch in anticipation of hearing the story. I'm Teresa. I do not have the itchy eyebrows.
I'm Angie. I am so excited. My eyebrows itch. And also, how Sheldon Cooper is that phrase?
You know, honestly, this checks. This checks.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Like,
I would
start with, like, you know, the how are you and the everything, but I don't care. I've got like 7 pages of notes. This will be a single episode.
Let's do
I
it.
really hope you have nothing else planned.
I am so freaking excited. Let's go.
Okay. So I'm going to start with my sources. I'm not even going to tell you what I'm about. I'm going to two podcasts, The Pithy Chronicle, Warrior Women of Japan, Onomusha. Deviant Women have a episode on Takeko Nakano. And then a literary journal article, War in History, and the article title is Female Combatants in Japan's Meiji Restoration, The Case of Aizu, by Diana E. Wright.
Okay.
And the great news is none of these titles gave anything away, and by your reaction, you don't know this story, or you would be peeing yourself in anticipation.
Okay, so I don't think I know this story, but there are a couple stories swirling around in my head with which I can't place the name.
Fair.
So I'm just going to sit on my hands and wait until there's a fact that jumps out and smacks me in the face like an octopus in the
ocean
kayak. Yeah.
Okay. So way back in episode one, I covered the Black Samurai, and I have to give
he's
you, like,
still my favorite.
There's going to be like a lot of like, okay, and in the meantime, like I have to set up a lot of situations so that you understand, like, this is the time period, this is the end. Like, I have to give you all that background.
Are some context clues.
Exactly. Like, we're too white for this story to happen in a bubble. Like, we need to know, like, the full landscape. So just for high level things, 1580s, we have a dude named Yasuke, who's likely from Sudan, black dude, comes over and joins up with a man named Oda Nobunaga. And Nobunaga is the scary badass who equipped and trained peasants to fight and unifies Japan. I mentioned how one general betrays and ambushes Nobunaga. And then when Nobunaga realizes that this is a foregone conclusion, it's 30 men against 3 grand. He ain't winning. He commits seppuku, but before he does, he asks Yasuke, the black samurai, to cut off his head and to run it to Nobunaga's son so that he can have an honorable burial.
In fact.
Okay. I just want to make sure you have that, because the head was commonly a trophy that you would keep. And so if you were able to give the head an honorable burial, then that you'd be robbing your opponent of that. So that, holding your noodle noggin. Next, I want to kind of hit on Confucianism, the thoughts and phrasing and ideology that hails from China. Now, it hits Japan in the Edo period, which for you and I, who don't have that just tattooed on our skin, it's from 1603 to 1868. Now, in Japan, prior to this, there was the practice of the Onomusha or Onobugeisha. Do you know anything about that?
I'm going to say off the top of my head, no.
Okay, so you have the samurai warrior class. That class comprises of both men and women, because you need men and women to make baby samurai in the same class.
In fact.
Yeah. Now, these people would, like, the women would be taught martial arts and calligraphy and, like, the violence and the good things, right? While the men would be called samurai, or they were of the samurai class, the women would be the onamusha, or female warriors. Now,
okay.
If it's onamusha, it'd be female warriors, like for battle, for battlefield, for actual combat. If it's onabugeisha, it'd be for like home and property. Like, so that's the delineation.
Do you
Now,
pick?
I think it's what you're born into, right?
That
Like, and
makes
I think
sense
it's
because in
very
my
time
mind,
period.
I was thinking, oh, okay, before she's married, it's one,
And
and
then
then
she
she marries
switches over.
or whatever the equivalent is, then she switches over, yeah.
You know, quite possibly, and hold that in your noodle because that there's going to be a tie-in to that aspect of
Okay.
needing to choose and what that could look like. The practice of having these female warriors, that starts to wane in the 1700s because of this practice of Confucianism coming in. Confucianism is like women need to be subservient to their husbands. They need to, you know, not travel alone, traditional gender roles kind of deal. And so,
Ugh, I hate this.
yes, they become subject to their husbands, to their fathers. They're not allowed to travel alone. And then there's actual like records of these onamusha being harassed by their male counterparts at checkpoints as they're just trying to do their job.
Figures.
Okay, so that's happening. So now we're going to go all the way to mid 1800s. We're going to go to a place called Aizu in central Japan. So I'm going to use my hand to show you. You have Tokyo here. You have Niigata, where I lived here. Aizu is like right in the middle.
Okay,
Okay.
perfect. All right.
It's a very beautiful area. It's in the Fukushima Prefecture. Fukushima, you know, of the nuclear accident. But anyhow, so all of that. There is a.
This was before the nuclear accident.
Yeah, prior to, right? So before they even had the reactors, there is a girl named Takeko Nakano. She's born to a fairly okay-ish family. She ends up being adopted. Like, we don't have a ton of information about her early history, so I'm going to kind of gloss over a lot of the early stuff. But she's adopted by a martial arts master and calligrapher, and dude's name is Akaoka Daisuke. And Akaoka, he's been stationed at the at Aizu, at, there's a castle there, as the kind of official watchdog of the area. He is a Naginata instructor. Do you know what Naginata is?
It's a form of martial arts, but I don't know.
It is
It's not
the
sticks.
bow is the stick that you're thinking of. Imagine a long pole with a blade at the end. That's the
Okay. Okay.
Naginata. And he's the Naginata instructor for the lady of the domain, a woman named Teru. Like, and I'll go back and forth with calling her Lady Teru or Teruhime. Hime just means lady. So he's the one teaching Teruhime, Naginata, and he's pretty damn good at it. So he ends up adopting our girl Takeko. Now, it's pretty common for the Japanese warriors to be trained in both martial arts as well as like something like calligraphy or music or things like that. And it was to give them a very well-rounded education. And I was even talking with my karate instructors about this. And one of the things they had said is you need a calm mind to use weapons, because the weapon is just an extension, and that extension just becomes more agitated. You know, so you'd need to do things to make sure you're chill.
It's your balance.
Yeah, and like my instructor told me, like if you don't think about what you're doing with certain weapons, even if they're dull, you're gonna cut the tar out of yourself. Or if you don't use a very light grip because you're so nervous about it, you're gonna have a big issue. Like there's all kinds of like
Yeah.
nuance there. Okay, so Akaoka, he's teaching Takeko combat, and he's training 20 other girls simultaneously at the school in Aizu. And so he adopts Takeko, and then he adopts another girl, Hirata Kocho. And both of these names are going to come up. I try to only include names that are going to be recurring because there's some notes. Now, it's 1863. Takeko is 16 years old. She's she's graduated in the sense that she's become a master of her art, which is incredible because
Get it, girlfriend.
at 16, I didn't even have a driver's license. You know what I mean?
Same.
Just for comparison. And she goes through this ceremony where she becomes a woman and she's given a kaiken, which is a dagger that's 8 to 10 inches long by her mother. Now, this dagger is
I
both.
assume adopted mother?
Good question. Adopted mom or real mom comes back into the story. And so I couldn't get clarification as to which mom gave the dagger. But she gets a
Okay,
dagger.
I was on. There we go.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, there's a lot of like, I don't know. There's a, for this being in the mid 1800s, there is a crap ton that I know. And later on, you're going to be like, how, I'm sorry. Who paused to write this down? Because
Yeah, it's just, it's. To me, it's interesting because you don't experience it a lot in American culture. I think probably because we're so young compared to everybody else. But the idea of adoption, but still being in contact, or quote unquote adoption, but still having
yeah.
contact with your biological family. So I wasn't sure if it's something like she was adopted by him, serves as his ward kind of thing, or she's an orphan and he takes her in.
So she's
You
not an
know?
orphan, like guaranteed not an orphan, but she is, brought into the household of Akaoka. Now,
Perfect.
what that looks like, how that manifests, there's a lot of ambiguity.
Perfect.
Now, this kaiken is both ceremonial and very practical. She's supposed to keep it on her at all times. If she's in that beautiful kimono, it's supposed to be with her. If she is on the battlefield, it is supposed to be with her. If she is walking the dog, with her. And it's
Going to the
supposed to
Starbucks with
with
her.
her. Yeah. That weapon would be used to commit seppuku if you needed to, or maybe to fend off an attacker should you know that you could get away with it. Because at this point, death over dishonor.
Right.
Now, one of the great things about her is that she is a bit of a badass. And she's when she's working at the school that Akoka runs and teaching Naginata, becoming more of a badass with this weapon, she's doing things like catching peeping toms at the bathhouse. And
I get it, girlfriend.
like she's just dedicated, and like hearing that, I'm like, okay, I love her. I love her. Her adopted dad wants our girl Takeko to marry his nephew. She's a badass warrior. She'd be a great fit. Let's keep that in the family. You know what I mean? Like, this seems like a
Yeah.
win-win. If she decided to marry the nephew, she'd have to sacrifice her work and she'd need to become a wife and a mom. Now, as all this is happening, there is a crap ton of civil unrest that has Takeko uneasy. Now, sidebar. The Americans arrive.
Course we do.
Now, they're led by a dude named Commander Matthew Perry.
I'm sorry, what? Because
Yes.
now I need you to know the visual that I'm dealing with.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a couple watercolors that look like caricatures of a man that you would not be proud to be. He doesn't look
Oh
much
my
better.
God. He looks like Javier Bodum.
I don't know who that
Not
is.
Chandler Bing.
No. It basically not somebody that you would really write home about or be excited to know.
Facts. I'm not writing in my journal about him.
So not Friends or TV's Tyler or Matthew Perry. Okay, but anyhow, Matthew Perry arrives in 1854 and he's seeking a trade deal because Americans are going to capitalist. And the Japanese,
Capitalize gonna capitalize.
right? Like the Japanese aren't really into it. I mean, they're still heavy in their isolationist movement.
Good for them.
They're not wanting to play games. Because he wants this deal so bad and he knows that his weapons are superior because America, he starts firing
I love that
cannons.
we've had that our entire existence.
I mean, look, we're good at one thing.
We do it well.
So he starts firing his cannons to display their reach and their superiority. And
That's a
this,
great way to work.
right? Especially if you're
Yeah.
firing them at the people you're trying to sell
That's
to.
exactly what I was imagining. Like, oh, I burnt down three city blocks. See how well they reached, though? And
Yeah.
how efficient they are?
Now that's
Also, we'll send in some guys to
MATT
rebuild that.
HEW space PERRY.
You.
Add another
Do you need a
zero to
pen?
that. So yeah, he's selling all of this stuff. And it's basically the shogun who's the one who's like caving in and going for this deal. Because at this point, Japan has a figurehead like emperor who's there for just, name and name alone kind of deal. And then there's the shogun who's running everything.
This checks.
Now, the Japanese aren't exactly too excited about this because, much like Americans have always been America, the Japanese haven't always been too keen on foreigners. And this isn't new by 1860 something, right? Like this is
Yeah, this
fairly
is not a
established.
surprise.
Yeah, like they were isolationist for a reason. And it
Yeah.
now they start to lose faith in their shogun.
Oh
And
no.
there starts to become like pockets of people who are opening themselves up to the idea of maybe the emperor should have more power. Maybe the emperor should emperor.
That's wild.
Yeah, and then the other colonial powers decide that, well, we don't want America to have all the fun, so the French and the British move in to also sell weapons.
Because of course,
Yep.
this checks.
So
Like, why
all
am I not even a little bit surprised?
no,
Where's
because
Portugal?
I don't see them in this story, believe it or not.
Wild. Okay, carry on.
I could have just needed an additional source, but here we are. Now, as all of this is happening, we're watching the nobles split allegiance left and right. Some are moving under the shogun, some are moving under Emperor Meiji. Like, these are things. Now, the shogun's pissed off enough people that Emperor Meiji decides, I've had it. Enough is enough. And he sends the Imperial Army to invade Aizu. It
Oh,
has
geez.
men from 34 domains, mostly from Western Japan. So his numbers are just under 75,000 men.
That's like sending your big brother and all of his friends
Yes.
to
So
solve your beef.
he's got about 68,000 general troops, five artillery men or five artillery units that are 120 men each, so 600 total. He's got 100 cannon of various types. I could list them if you want, but
You're
it's a
fine.
lot. Now, the rebels in Aizu, they've got older technology. So despite like, okay, so Aizu has control over the western port of Niigata, where I lived for years. Now, Niigata was where you would think they'd be bringing these weapons in. The crazy part is that even though the shogun was the one who opened up trade, tools and the tools of violence that he got access to were the older, more, we're just going to get rid of our leftover surplus stock. And then,
Last year's stuff.
yeah. And so then when the shogun buys all of that, it's, and they're still wanting more things. That's when the Emperor Meiji's like, hey, I want some weapons too. That's when they're like, oh crap, we only have the new stuff. Okay, we'll sell the new stuff to the Emperor. So it's really lopsided with the weapons, especially when you think of the Emperor didn't want the foreigners there, and now he's the one with the high powered guns. Okay, hold that in your noodle. Now, the Aizu were able to cobble together roughly 7,000 people versus
Nice.
74,000. So a tenth.
Okay.
They've got two artillery units of 200 men total. They've got a unit of shock troopers, a unit of engineers, and then the remaining are both
Hold
official.
on. I'm so sorry. You cannot just like gloss over the phrase shock trooper. And no, good and well, my nerd brain did not just scream Star Wars at you.
To be fair, I also read Shock Trooper and went, Okay, wait. What? Shock troopers basically like great trained people who are at the front lines to just,
Do the thing.
yeah, they're good at what they do. You don't invite them to Easter dinner. They're not going to be bringing the casserole or the really ornate cake. They're going to have some blood under their fingers.
Listen, you can make the cake and still be a shock trooper.
You know what? You're right. I did talk
Balance,
about
Teresa.
how the
Balance.
samurai needed that. Have you been talking to my instructors? Because I swear to Wally. Anyhow, so now the remaining peeps, they're both elites and commoners. They're formal bands, they're ad hoc. Like we've got the whole roundup here. We have 4,000 peasant troops. We have 400 elderly warriors. So think people who've retired, the veterans.
Mulan's dad.
Yes. We've got 900 from what is called the Blue Dragon Group from the eastern portion of Aizu. We've got 300 teenage people from the White Tiger Group. Remind me to touch base on this because this I would have to go from memory. And that, so if you don't remind me, I won't remember to tell you. And then the most prominent, and I say most prominent, is a group called the Joshigan or the Women's Army.
That a girl.
Now, under the Tokugawa regime, all women of the samurai castle, they trained in martial arts, as you would think. And this training was to enable them to protect their families and to prevent them from being dishonored, right? Death before dishonor. Now, this level of training that the women would receive in the samurai castle, it really, really depended on where you were born, who you were born to. Now, if you were born, maybe not in the Aizu castle, maybe you were born to a poverty-stricken samurai, you would learn sewing, hairstyling, and they would try to teach you self-sufficiency by adolescence.
Okay.
But you're also taught to read and write.
Good for them. Oh my gosh.
Okay. Now, in Aizu, these women are receiving in-depth combat training, specifically with Naginata. Because remember, we got our man there who's teaching and adopting girls to teach them the Naginata. Now, they're indoctrinated into setting up a hierarchy on what matters. Their primary focus is to protect their domain and the lord of the domain.
This checks.
Then, as a secondary, it's their families.
Okay.
So, when Takeko blows off her marriage arrangement with her adopted dad, she goes home to Aizu and joins the unit at her mother's castle, not really knowing that all of this is marching down on top of her. Now, the Meiji regime,
This checks.
they've adopted a scorched earth policy against the Aizu rebels. They're pissed.
Okay.
There's rumors circulating that the army plans to slaughter all the Aizu men and then sell the women to who they call the Occidentals or members of the Western world.
Of course. This also checks.
So these are some big things to be thinking about. Now, in the late fall, the Imperial forces drill down on Aizu. And it was at that moment, the castle's mainly occupied by women of the samurai caste and then males who are either too old or too young. It's by the second week of this invasion that most of the warrior families fled to Aizu Wakamatsu, which is where this castle is. They're moving in and they're hiding behind the city walls. And then October 8th, the district becomes under attack. So all of this preparation, brace yourself. I've got a lot coming. Many of the women prepare for battle. And as they did, they cut their hair, and then some wrote death poems to help themselves prepare for what they're going through,
Right.
prepare their soul. One poem is written by two sisters, age 13, age 16. Wait.
Oh, that gave me chills.
You ready for their poem?
Yes, no, yes.
With two hands joined as one, we venture out journeying to the mountain of death.
So, Sam and Frodo?
Pretty much. But then we also know Takeko's poem, and she writes it
Oh,
and
wow.
ties it to her naginata. And it says, "When compared to the ranks of warriors' stalwart hearts, I cannot enter into their number despite this body of mine."
Wow, okay. Not what I thought she was gonna say.
No. So she's just like, "I will do my best, but I am just a woman." Basically, it's the "I'm just a girl" by No Doubt.
Okay. The imat like the pop culture going through my brain right now is wild.
I know you have the Imperial Death March, No Doubt.
Led by Chandler Bing.
This is the mashup. So the Imperial Army rips through the residential area with rifles and incendiary cannonballs, which I didn't know were a thing until this story.
Like the precursor to grenades.
But like a cannonball that explodes,
Yeah, okay.
which is hair-raising. Now, by midday, the first day of this attack, things become desperate, and the watch bell sounds its warning, calling all defenders to retreat to the Suruga Castle. Now, the Joshikan, they experience a range of responses. Now, 100 years prior to this battle, they would probably have been trained in a more combat-oriented way, but because of Confucianism and girls who just sit home and crank out babies, they're not exactly combat trained. They're more sparring is very different from murdering somebody.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So some are committing seppuku, some retreat to the castle, some are fleeing into the countryside, and others keep fighting. In the article, Female Combatants and Japan's Meiji Restoration, the author explains that many women who are middle age or lower ranking, maybe their male providers had previously died, they're opting out of life. And they all know that the fortress has limited rations. So
Okay.
they're choosing to not be a burden.
Oh.
Records show that 230 mid-ranking military family members and retainers participated in a mass suicide just as the Imperial Army breached the outer walls.
Good Lord.
Now, one woman chooses to make her last stand fighting, and her name is Jimbo Yukiko. And you or you Jimbo Yukiko. Now, Jimbo Yukiko, she recognizes the foregone conclusion of the battle, and she moves into action. And one observer notes that she had been dressed in pure white robes, or they'd been white, before she decided to protect the honor of her family by decapitating both mother-in-law and daughter before cropping her hair, grabbing her naginata, and descending into battle.
Oh, wow.
So she goes from pure white to blood red.
Like that.
Now, given the
Holy
news
beans.
of the Imperial Army's policy to stamp out the rebellion, I understand her actions, as frenetic as they seem, because the Aizu samurai expected a zero leniency policy. And some records suggest that she could have been as young as 18.
Oh, wow. That is insane.
Now, the Joshigun trained in swords, naginata, or rifles, and they make up 20 to 30 women.
Okay.
Now, of these women, we only really know 10 of them, although I peeked at a Wikipedia article, and that article named 17.
Okay.
Now, Takeko is 22. Takeko's fighting beside her mother, Kuko, who's either 40 or 44. And then she's got her sister, Masako, who's 16. Now, for them, when the warning bell sounds, Koko and her daughters slash their waist-length hair to shoulder length. They tie it into a ponytail that even has the side locks. They are wearing silk headbands that are white, They'd modified the long sleeves of their robes by tying them back with the white silk straps. And then they're even wearing the men's hakama, which is the white leg pleated pants that you see on like the temple priests and whatnot. And they're wearing straw sandals. We know that Takeko's hakama was red, just for visuals.
That's awesome.
And then they take up their short swords and their naginata and they head into battle. Now, another thing to think about as we think about and visualize these women, married women at this time would have blackened teeth.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Yeah. That was all the rage. Okay.
Now, the unmarried women would have looked like little boys.
Also checks.
So they go into battle and they don't realize this, but the gates to the castle are barred behind them.
Okay.
Now, Fuko technically was the official head of the Joshigun, but Takeko is the driving force. So Takeko and the Joshigun made it to the designated rallying point just beyond the city's gates. And when they get there, they learn that Teruhime had been evacuated to Bangi, which is 11.8 kilometers from Suruga Castle, and the Joshigun immediately decide to go to her aid. Now, this isn't a nice sunny day. It's 3 hours that the women struggle to reach Bangi under sleet and rain.
Okay.
So 6 miles, 3 hours, because it is not a good hike. And it's during this voyage.
In straw shoes. Okay.
Now it's during this voyage that Jimbo Yuriko, the blood-soaked battle angel that we have, she joins up with a couple of others. And once there, the locals feed the squad of women. Even though we have record that one Joshigun memoir shares that maybe not all the provisions were freely given. There may have been some taking. And once there, they realize that Teruhime is still at Tsuruga Castle, that they had bad intel. Now,
Oh my God.
they're kind of at a rallying point for the shogun's other troops. And so later that night, Takeko meets up with the forces at Machiya Cannon Brigade, also in Bangi. And she offers the support of her women, and he declines. He kind of thinks that if women participate in this battle, it'll demonstrate the weakness of the region. So Takeko repeats her request, but she ends it by stating that if she's not allowed to fight alongside the brigade, she's just going to clock out right there in front of him immediately.
As you do.
And he is excited by her passion, but says maybe she should wait and talk to some of the other shogunate troops that are coming. And so October 9th, she meets with another field commander, and he's impressed with her desire to fight, but he wants him to go back to the castle, basically where all the action's going to happen. And he passes her off to another man. And this commander designates them as their own squad with Takeko as the leader. Remember, she's like
Get him.
22, like 21, 22. Now, that night, Takeko and her mother, Koko, are having an argument over Takeko's 16-year-old sister. Because Masako, the 16-year-old, while she's been trained to fight, she's also really beautiful. And they know that this war is a foregone conclusion. Koko wants her to go into hiding with a local family. Masako, she's 16. She's got some big feelings about it. She feels very passionately about this. And if her
Yeah.
sister was a master at 16, you know, why not her kind of deal? Now,
There.
they start, you know, well, how could we protect her, you know, the best way? And after a long conversation, they realize that if Masako sits this one out and goes into hiding and is found by the Imperial forces, it's going to be horrible for her. And they decide it's better if she stays.
In fact.
So October 10th, the Imperial Army has gotten in between the rebel forces and the castle, and the Aizu warriors split into three groups. you have the two sides that are going to flank, and then you have the side going for the center. Now, the Joshigun were put in the group attacking the middle. They're most positioned to die. And they're deciding
of
that
course.
Basically, like, look, we're going to be sacrificed, but we'd rather go out fighting, and it'll give the outer flanks a greater chance for success. Now, since the Imperial Army is literally 10 times bigger, they decide to do a flash attack where they're going to attack suddenly and then disperse kind of deal. They know they can't do a strong, long battle. And the Joshigun know getting captured isn't an option. And they want to die fearlessly
Facts.
In the line of fire.
Yeah, okay.
So they attack. And the Imperial troops, as soon as they recognize that they're fighting women, because again, the guns are good, but they're not, you know, what we've got today. So you have to be close enough to recognize you're attacking a woman kind of deal. As soon as they realize that, they start screaming to take the women alive. So the men stop using guns on the women.
I
Now
feel like this
imagine.
was a mistake on the men's part.
Well, yes, you're not wrong. Because that Naginata gives the women a reach that
Yeah.
they wouldn't have otherwise had in a sword-to-sword combat. Now, also, imagine being a woman and hearing they know you're a woman, they want to take you alive.
Yeah, no.
You've just kicked out some extra endorphins you didn't have a second ago.
Yeah, that adrenaline has got pumping.
Yeah. The women are not going to be pulling their punches. And many men start falling to their Naginata. Now, Hakeko's, quote, intense male spirit is recorded as she starts crossing 5 or 6 men off the census. And
that girl.
It's at this point she takes a shot to the head and or chest.
No.
Now, Hakeko's afraid of her head being taken as a trophy, so she asks her sister to decapitate her. As she's
no,
bleeding out.
we're not done yet.
Records say it was either due to the Keiko's matted hair, which was caked in blood, or the sheer exhaustion of the battle, but Masako can't finish it. And so she's assisted by an Aizu soldier, Ueno Yoshiburo. And Masako wraps Takeko's head in a scarf. And then after the battle, it's taken to Hokkaiji Temple at Bangi for a cremation. Now, we're going to cut the camera to another section of the battle where we see our blood-soaked battle angel. On the battlefield, as you know, she is moving through, she saves Takeko's foster sister, Hirata Kocho. And then this woman, Jimbo Yuriko, she is captured and interrogated by the Imperial forces. And she's refusing to cooperate with any of the things that they're going to tell her or ask her. And the Imperial forces realize that she's not going to talk, and so they sentence her to death. Now, the Imperial company commander, Yoshimatsu, he's touched by her spirit and her fearlessness. And knowing that she's going to die and wanting to, like, show her humanity, he lends her his own short sword, enabling her to commit seppuku.
Good Lord.
He and his family passed down her story through their generations. We get her story
wow.
from him.
That's awesome.
Which is an incredible thing when you think about, you know, having your enemy tell how heroically you went out.
I think, honestly, that's something that most of the Western world misses, the respect of your enemy.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an interesting thing to see, but also very real. Like, I do want a worthy adversary. Like, why do we not have that mindset?
And this was a woman. And this woman is standing up to men who...
And I imagine her all of 5'1".
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, and I think that's generous, you know? I've been in this castle. Like, I recognize it. I have smacked my head on the beams going from floor to floor. Like, there's not a lot of room.
Yeah, okay.
Now, Takeko's foster sister, Hirate Kocho, she becomes the deputy commander of the Joshigun. And eventually they return to the Suruga
And
Castle
this is the
to.
beautiful one, right?
No, Masako is the beautiful one. This is the one who is
Oh, that okay.
adopted by, alongside with the,
Okay, got it.
Naginata trainer. Now, we do know that it's at this point that Keiko's head is given funeral rites and her Naginata is donated to the temple in Bungie or
Oh, wow,
Bungie.
that's cool.
Bungay, Bungay. I've been saying Bungie this whole time, but it's Bungay. And then October 13th, the remaining Joshigun all return to the castle and they somehow make their way back inside. And we even know the code word they said and the word that was answered to allow them in, which is incredible to me.
Yeah.
Now, they meet with Lord Katsumori and they tell him about the battle. And then they meet with Teruhime. Suruga Castle undergoes a siege that lasts 30 days, and Teruhime keeps managing everything. She's got 600 women and children, 500 wounded soldiers, and the cannons are ripping through the castle starting on August 9th. And she's directing the women to cover holes.
August 9th or October 9th?
October 9th. October 9th. Thank you for catching that. So, as
Gotcha.
these incendiary cannonballs are ripping through the walls, she's directing the women to cover them with wet mats and rice sacks before they explode.
Okay.
Now, by the end of that day, the number of wounded exceed 1,000 soldiers.
Oh my God.
And then medical supplies run out. And then the food stocks dwindle. And then the castle inhabitants are forced to brave trips to procure food. And then the dead start piling up, and sanitation becomes a massive issue. And then the water supplies dry up, and the dead are dumped in the wells that are empty. But
Oh.
they're doing anything they can. Now, October 11th, the ammo runs out, and the women are collecting the enemy bullets to reuse to give the surviving Jogun or Joshigun sharpshooters a chance. And one sharpshooter, Yamamoto Yeiko, is 23. She's the daughter of a gunnery instructor, and her older brother had been trained in using Dutch arms in 1857, and he teaches her. And so she's trained in both the new guns and then the older style. And
I
Yeiko,
like this for her.
she starts teaching the women how to create more ammunition. And she takes command of male soldiers that are on a 4-pound cannon. And I had to look this up because I'm like, a 4-pound cannon? What is that? Is that a paperweight? But it is, when you think of what to get somebody who has everything. You get them a little 4-pound cannon for their desk. It's like eight.
It's going to cost me $700 to ship that to you.
Right. But apparently, the 4-pound cannon relates to the poundage of the cannonball and not the device firing it.
This makes sense.
It's like, okay, once I looked it up and I was like, I could have come to that conclusion as opposed to imagine. It's so cute.
Goodness.
So Yeiko is like running things. And then October 26th, the Imperial forces breach the walls and they start torching the city. They bombard the castle from October 30th to around November 1st. And then it's finally on November 5th, the castle surrenders. Even though the castle surrenders, they kind of take a couple of days to hang the white flags in the right spots. The Imperial sees just under 5,000 prisoners, 576 women of mid-ranked warriors, 84 elite warrior women, 51 cannon, 2,845 guns, 25,000 rounds of ammunition, 1,300 lances, and 81 naginata.
Good Lord.
Now, in terms of surrender, they promised that men over the age of 60 and under the age of 14 would be allowed to live in their homes without being harassed. The lord of his castle and his heir, they're able to keep 25 male attendants and 12 women. The lord and their heir are taken to Tokyo and put under house arrest. Two-thirds of Aizu Wakamatsu is destroyed. Now, at first, the imperial forces prohibit the funeral rites to the warriors. They just want the bodies laid out and rot. And then health concerns pop up and they reconsider this edict.
Yeah.
Of the Aizu troops originally mentioned, Over half are dead or wounded. 233 are women.
Good Lord.
Now, little is known about our Joshikan survivors, but we do know that Takeko's foster sister, Hirata Kochi, survives. She was the one pulled out of battle by the blood-soaked battle angel. She marries a former samurai. He becomes a police officer in Yamagata Prefecture. Takeko's 16-year-old sister, Masako, also survives. She's forced to relocate and settles in Hokkaido. She gets married and works at a as a girls' school teacher and house mom. Our girl, the sharpshooter, Yamamoto Yaiko, she also survives. We know that she divorced her husband shortly after the castle's surrender, and she moves to Kyoto and moves in with her brother and cares for him for a couple of years. And then in 1876, she gets remarried again and becomes one of the co-founders for Doshisha University in Kyoto. And then she fights for women's rights. She dies in 1932 at age 86.
That's wild. Yeah, my brain was not, I understood we were in the late 1800s, but my brain was like, nope, that's still like 3,000 years ago.
Right, you don't want to hear that had access to sliced bread.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite click. The fall of Aizu Wakamatsu marks the end of the shogunate. And zipping back to Takeko, she still remembered. There's a memorial on the spot where she died. Young women go to this place and pay homage to her. And then there's an annual festival in Aizu Wakamatsu where young girls dressed in hakama and white headbands commemorate the Joshikan.
Oh, that's so cool.
You want to see photos?
Yeah, of course.
What? There's photos?
Madam.
I know. That is Takeko.
She is gorgeous.
Now,
I would
this.
like to, huh.
Go ahead. You would like to
I,
what?
I'm just, I was trying to say, I would like to figure out how to properly describe her, but I don't know what the words for her garments are called.
So.
She's beautiful.
She is the quintessential Japanese woman. She is wearing kimono, multiple layers. You see her hair pulled up in the traditional way. She is just looking into the camera without much of an expression, likely because it
Her
takes so
eyebrows are
long.
on point.
Oh, yeah.
Devastatingly beautiful.
When you look up photos of Takeko, you'll commonly see this black and white photo here of this woman in full kimono, very high def. And then you see all the swords. This is actually a photo of likely an actress portraying a member of the Onimusha.
That makes more sense because this photo looks like it came out of the 20s or the 30s.
Yeah. Like it's just not
Yeah.
as quality. Now, you remember our girl, the sharpshooter?
Oh my gosh, that's her.
That's
She's
her.
wearing a Victorian style silk high collared. You'd see Queen Victoria wear this dress.
Oh, yeah. They could
Yeah,
easily
I mean
swap
she's even
garments
got her
here.
hair in that bun. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Then here you have Hirata Konjo, Takeko's foster sister, and then another Onimusha.
Oh, wow. That's crazy that you have these photos,
I
like
know
that they
it.
exist and we can see them.
And then
Wow.
this is a photo, or this is a photo of the statue of her of Takeko in Bunge in Aizu. I'll let you describe that.
Okay, so her she's got the headband on. You can't quite see her hair. At least that's the way I'm imagining this to look. It's got to be 12 feet tall from the base to the top. You see her weapon. She's got the pants on that you would, like Teresa said, that you would see the priest wear, and the kimono over it and the sword on her belt. She has a strange look of peace on her face.
Yeah, someone very prepared emotionally to start crossing names off censuses.
Yeah, very
Yeah.
much so.
She's calm with making more room at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Now, this is a photo of the castle right after the battle.
Oh, wow. Okay. You can see some holes in the walls.
Yeah.
Part of the second or third story, I think that's the third story's roof is kind of going in. It's one, two, three, four, five, six, at least six stories.
I think it's like seven altogether, but I mean,
Yeah. I
six or
can't quite
seven.
tell because that middle one looks like that's an addition on the side, but so I couldn't tell if that was one we should count.
Yeah, I.
But there's definitely the ground one too.
Right. That's the castle
Oh,
now.
today
Yep.
it's gorgeous. Yeah, it's definitely seven stories, I think.
Now, then, when Kiddo and I were goofing around, we came up with this. Like, we were looking around and finding all kinds of stuff. Somebody created a 3D model of the castle. And this was absolutely crazy to play a la around with. Now you have the stone wall, so you can see that. Now, Suruga Castle apparently originally had that red tile, and that red tile was replaced at some point. Now, there was one
Okay.
spot I wanted to get to, the Iron Gate. Remember, I told you how when they were fighting, they couldn't get back through because the gate was barred?
Oh,
That's
yeah.
the gate.
Oh, okay. It's gorgeous. It's that just dark, lacquered black. It's the name of this gate is called because its walls covered with iron. Okay.
Yeah, now
That's fascinating.
these were obviously written by English as a second language learner, but it's still incredible just to kind of like flip around and like see. Now, I do want to say I remembered the story of the White Tiger group, the
Ah,
teenage samurai.
yeah.
They're fighting up on a mountain overlooking the castle. And when I went to Suruga Castle, I only knew the story that I'm about to tell you. I didn't know the story of Takeko. The White Tiger Clan, they're fighting, and you have Suruga Castle, them fighting, and then there's like space in between. Well, in the middle of them fighting, they're victorious. They nail it. Then they see like lots of smoke coming up, and because of their vantage point, it looks like the castle's on fire. And so they
Oh, okay.
assume it's completely gone, and they all commit seppuku right there.
Ugh. That's so Shakespearean. Nobody thought
Yeah.
to run down and check.
You know what's even worse? We know all of this. We know their mindset. We know what they saw. We know all of this because one of them, it doesn't quite take, and he survives.
Ugh.
Which I think is even worse.
Yeah, in this particular case, because he's got to live knowing,
Yeah.
we could have actually just gone home and had a victorious feast later.
I mean, he still would have been rounded up with the rest of the samurai and then dealt
Yeah, I guess
with.
that's true.
I mean, he would likely survive because the many of the samurai, they didn't quite have the scorched earth policy that, or they didn't, in the Meiji Emperor didn't enact the scorched earth policy that he'd been operating under. Like, he took all of these samurai and then kind of moved them to a different spot and like worked with them there and kind of dealt with them in his own way, but they did live. It wasn't as brutal as we'd have assumed, but still kind of a hair-raising thing. And it was just really fascinating to kind of go in, because I meant to tell kind of a different story or a shorter story of Takeko. And then when I realized how much information I stumbled on about so many members of her group, I was like, I've got to tell you about all of them. I've got to.
Well, I'm glad you did. It's such a first of all, we don't hear enough about women in situations like this, and it's such a testament to their skill set and their bravery, and to be in their presence would have been such an honor, I think.
Yeah, people who were so committed to their cause to go like, here's what I've got to do. Here's the this is going to suck, but this is the best path forward.
Yeah. They're astounding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And night she died in 1932, you said?
Yeah.
The one that survived.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I know. She was like one of the oldest ones to make it out. But then to like one of the sources that I had an alternate ending, which I was like, yeah, that's not really happened. They had said that Teruhime and all the women held up inside when they realized that this was the bitter end and that this was the way out. They cleaned the entire castle and then all joined together and then committed seppuku right there. Showing, and so then the soldiers come in and track dirt everywhere, and then they realize that like there's like they've proven that they didn't get the women because the whole castle's clean except for that one spot. Now, the fact that we know that Teruhime actually survives, and she, while her husband and son go to Tokyo to live under house arrest, she survives as well, but she goes to Tokyo and stays with her family there, her birth family. And I just was like, oh my gosh, like so we have all of these things. We've got the mythologized accounts of her ending it with the women that she had access to, and then like her actually like surviving, and then the stories of the Joshigun who continued to survive. Like they still faced a lot of prejudice because they stood up against the winning party, because they stood up against the emperor and the emperor won. They're still kind of
Right.
held against. Like Yaiko, she when she goes and she's opening these schools, she's still heavily scrutinized for everything that she did.
Of
And
course.
I don't know if I would be that cruel to somebody who is renowned for being a sharpshooter of multiple different kinds of weapons.
Yeah, like it feels like not the right thing to do.
Maybe not to her face.
Period. You don't say nothing because she's gonna find out.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Do you want to sleep in your bed tonight with both eyes closed?
Right. But still just nuts. But that is the story of the Battle of Aizu.
I loved it. I love your blood-soaked battle angel. When you gave me that note, I was like,
Oh.
holy cow, what are we talking about? So excited.
I know. I mean, just because to know that she was in pure white, made this horrific decision, and then is described as being formerly blood white, but now just blood red. It's just like, oh.
She's seen a thing or two.
Yeah, and then to realize the age of all of them. Like we're talking that Keiko's mom was our age.
Yeah. That's insane to me. No, thank you. I'm happy with my battle to get out of the grocery store.
Yeah, shopping
Yeah.
carts are not my weapon of choice, but preferred considering.
Yeah. It is wild to me to think of how often that's the case when in our stories the our individuals are so much younger, you
Yeah.
know? And to know that, yeah, they can, as a matter of fact, that like they can and they do. Yeah. I'm gonna stand on they can do so much more than adults give them credit for all of eternity. I've said it 100 times and I'll say it 100 times more, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, to look at Masako at 16 going, I mean, you could stash me. I firmly disagree with this decision. At 16, my sister was considered a woman and given a weapon to off herself should she need to. And you're wanting to stash me because I've got flawless skin and good eyebrows? How about no?
How about we get a couple scars on this beautiful face so I can have some fun?
Yeah, it's just, but yeah.
Thank you. I love them. You big ol' show off.
I don't know if I'm a show off other than I can't not write notes because I'm like, and then what happened? And then what, like this
Oh.
whole battle was written by Quentin Tarantino, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The amount of times I've been like, well, these notes are going to be longer because I need to know what this is too. And it's related, but sidebarred,
Yeah.
but like super relevant at the same time. Yeah, I 100% get where you're coming from.
Like when the
And
commander's
if,
name is Matthew Perry, I had to mention it.
of course you did, because now he looks like Chandler Bing.
In your head, but in actuality.
Definitely in reality, absolutely not.
And
No,
when you
those are some
see
great
his
characters.
watercolor, you're like, oh, they didn't like you. And then you see his black and white photo, and you're like, no, they were accurate. Your mother didn't like you.
Oh, that's rough. I bet you his mother was probably gorgeous too. So she's like, oh, what
You know what? We're just going to put
the
this one on a boat. Send him into the ocean. I don't have to look at him.
heck? Okay,
Go write letters.
bye. That's rough. Poor guy. Now I'm sympathizing with the weapons dealer.
You're American, this checks.
This seems fair, actually, now that you say that. America's good America. Here we
Yep.
are.
So if you've enjoyed blood-soaked battle angels, arms-dealing Matthew Perry, and just the insanity that was the end of the Shogunate, and you're thinking, just what the heck are they? What story did Teresa cover up Angie from saying? And you're like, you know what? I've got to tune in next week. Well, we'll be here. Same channel, same time. And rate, review, subscribe, and share us with your very favorite Matthew Perry, because I'm sure there's another one running around out there. It's a fairly common name, all things considered. And on that note, goodbye.
Bye.